Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report under lockdown. And today is a gigantic news day, like Wednesdays usually are. And this show has one other thing in common with Wednesdays. It's got J.R. Jackson. J.R., how's it going?
Hey, what's going on? Okay, again, it's almost like this was supposed to be. It's the kind of day where, you know, I got to come back and talk about it because I have a lot of thoughts about the news that have happened. One specific, but as usual, I could ramble all damn day. You know how I am.
I think that's what we do. That's our job. So we're going to. But I want to start out this show like I did yesterday with Jordan Yule, I believe from the same individual. We got a comment from, well, this time from Kenny from Philly saying, let's get ready for TYT's Captain America and Black Panther. Today's the day, right, Cap? But my question to you, JR, is, you like, Jordan doesn't watch any of that. He doesn't know any superheroes or whatever. Sure. You actually are more devoted to superheroes by far than I am because you have a complex and ever-growing tattoo of superheroes. So, look, I'm perfectly happy with Captain America. It's not what I would have chosen. But what do you like the designation of Black Panther, or is there someone else that you associate more with? Because you know so much about this.
I know so much about it. So the thing is, like, Captain America, usually, you know, his boy that he rolls with, if we're going to talk about a black guy, at least in the current movies or the latest crop, is, you know, your boy with the Falcon, right?
Yeah.
So, but the thing is, he's a sidekick, so I'm totally and utterly rejecting that. I'm a king of an entire nation that everyone underestimates, so I'm down.
Okay.
I'm on board.
You know what? I know if they had done it, the internet would have exploded. They should have, and I don't know if it's canonical. I really haven't read a lot of comic books, so I apologize. There's a few I've read. But they should have passed on Captain America to Falcon. It looked like they were going to, didn't it?
Just do it. I thought it was like so obvious that no one would even have to question it, you know?
Yeah.
But
They should have. They had that whole relationship going back to the very beginning. It would have made so much sense. But why should things make sense? For instance, why on a political news show are we talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe? I don't know. But anyway, JR, very excited to have you on. Everyone watching in the chat right now, very excited to have you here. The only thing that could make me happier is if you were to hit the like button, because that would be awesome. And let people know that the stream is going on. As we go through the stories, and there's a ton that we're going to get to, some shocking news really today. We're going to be responding to your comments, super chats, and all of that. But before we get into it, though, I did want to let you know about one or two things. So the first is that we have started a special screening of a documentary film called Parkland Rising. That's going to be beginning on Monday, August 3rd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time. The film follows the stories of high school students as well as their families who became, you know, like fierce, impassioned leaders of the national movement for gun reform following the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. We're doing a free exclusive screening on August 3rd, and you'll be able to watch on youtube.com/theyoungturks and tyt.com/live. So definitely look forward to that on August 3rd. I'm also going to be talking once again with Fred Guttenberg, you know, father of one of those tragically lost in that shooting. He's going to be joining me on the show later today. It won't be live, so go check the channel later on, and that interview will be put up. And I also wanted to remind you that we have just a day or two left for our fundraising drive for the month of July. And so if you can, I know it's hard times, but if you can help TYT to stay afloat during this very difficult time for media, you can go to tyt.com/go and donate. Help us press on in this fight to make the country less of an apocalyptic hellscape. So with that, why don't we jump into it? I like your mug, by the way.
Oh.
That's a cool mug.
This is wife style. She chooses these fancy things. I would have, I'd have mugs that say something snarky on it.
I got the too strong one. Something snarky. By my count, we are 95 days away from the election. Maybe? Who knows? Because the single most powerful person in the world tweeted earlier today, with universal mail-in voting, not absentee voting, which is good. It's the same. It's the same thing. And he did it. 2020 will be the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history. It will be a great embarrassment to the USA. And what a change it would be for the USA to be embarrassed by its government. Delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote. So that was Donald Trump, president, doing what I guess was next up. It had to be this. He's looking out at the polls, And he's saying now maybe we delay. And look, I sort of make that connection, but a lot of people are. Rashida Tlaib tweeted right after him, the general election will take place on November 3rd, period. We aren't going to delay an election just because this impeached president's poll numbers are falling. Love Rashida Tlaib. But anyway, look, we've got some more on this, JR. The possibility of the election being postponed. Are you worried about it? Are you surprised by the tweet?
Well, the surprise is definitely not there. This kind of power grab is what he's been up to every other month. So everything increases slowly, or something gets floated. You know, there's a test, but there's a trial balloon to make sure to see where Americans stand, where his base stands on certain issues, so that he can perpetuate that further. I mean, you know, he went with the invasion of cities, starting with Portland, and then he floated going to other cities just to see what people would say. He even mentioned, you know, the hotspot cities that every conservative likes to throw out when they have no argument, to say Chicago. So if it's a trigger word, Chicago, Chicago. So mm-hmm. he says that, and you see if that works. Let's demonize the Postal Service. Let's actually take the legs out from the Postal Service just so my predictions can come true about the negative nature of the Post Office. Every step is trying to continue to consolidate this power and then subvert a democratic election. That's just the way, that's just the plan. And so after all these things have been working, frustration must be building. So now let's just go with the, how about we just delay the election? And maybe delayed turns into just canceling altogether. Again, it sounds crazy, and months ago when people say it sounded crazy, they're like, you're crazy, you've got Trump derangement syndrome. The problem is, this Trump derangement syndrome lies directly with Trump. That's the problem. He has Trump derangement syndrome, which means he thinks he can do whatever he wants in this country.
Yeah. Yeah, there are two acceptable forms of TDS. One is that he is himself deranged, and the other is that if you don't have a pretty strong reaction to what's been going on, what the hell is wrong with you, honestly? That's what it is. Having an issue with Donald Trump when he's invading cities, when he's allowing continued tens of thousands to die in this pandemic, presiding over an unnecessarily harsh economic hit that could have been limited if he'd taken the pandemic seriously, and now is talking about possibly delaying an election that is certainly going to be compromised in a number of different ways, even if it takes place on the day it's supposed to, necessitates a response. And so we will continue to provide it. Now, just to be clear, Mr. President, the president does not have the authority to move the date of a federal election. And Mr. Trump's other claim on Thursday that widespread mail-in voting would make the election inaccurate and fraudulent is also false. But let's dig a little bit more into the first. The date of the general election is set by federal law and has been fixed since 1845. So a bit of a tradition, I would say. It would take a change in federal law to move that date. That would mean legislation enacted by Congress, signed by the president, and subject to challenge in the courts. Now, of course, he would sign it, and the courts are largely on his side. But he still has to get it through Congress. And while I have very little faith in the Democrats and their control of the House, I have to assume they wouldn't do this, right? Come on. They could.
Yeah. I mean, we've been
come on.
Before.
And by the way, the Constitution mandates that the new Congress must be sworn in on January 3rd and that the new president's term must begin on January 20th. Those dates cannot be changed just by the passage of normal legislation. So the date of the election, that's law. The rest of it, when the change actually happens, that's the Constitution, which so many people in this country say that they love so much. We'll find out if that is actually the case. But anyway, that's what he's laying out. It's an election that he is trying to mess with in as many ways as possible. When it comes to mail-in voting, he is trying to limit that. When it comes to the ability of people to vote safely in the midst of a pandemic, he and his Republican goons have done as much as they can to make sure that the funding isn't there for states. It is an absolute disaster, but I just hope that this next level of disaster doesn't happen.
Yeah, is this transparent desperation attempt, because he knows how badly he's doing and how badly this could turn out, is this translating to the people that support him, to the people that like him because he's a strong man, who like him because he has this perceived power and he's got this high intellect in their opinion that he can do and see all? They don't see the sheer cowardice in this move. Mm-hmm. Do you see, like, have you looked up yet and looked at your leader and went, man, maybe he's not that strong? Maybe he's looking to mm-hmm. subvert this entire system for his own personal gain, because he's done nothing for me. When is that realization going to happen?
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, the thing is, like, to some extent, I really hope that we don't look back and look at this video and say, look at John. reading the law as if it matters, because it technically does matter. But it reminds me of a tweet, you know, in the early days of the crackdown in Portland, where Ken Klippenstein tweeted, begging the mods to stop Trump from declaring martial law. Like, at the end of the day, it is still a, will he respect any of this? Mm-hmm. They would have to change the law to change the date, and they would have to amend the Constitution to change the date that the switchover happens next year, if you go by ink on documents, effectively. Exactly. And the question is, will he do that? And if he doesn't do that, what will happen? Will the Republicans, you know, side with the Constitution? Will the Supreme Court rule against him? Will it matter if the Supreme Court rules against him? I tend to think that he will not be successful in that, but I understand people's fear if they think otherwise. Media Matters has put together an awesome compilation of the Republican reaction on Fox News, their hosts and some elected officials, to the idea expressed not long ago that Donald Trump could, in the end, try to delay the election. Here's some of the highlights.
Someone might want to check up on Joe Biden during this nationwide lockdown. He's saying some very strange things. Biden pushed a bizarre conspiracy theory. It was that President Trump may try and delay the 2020 election.
Joe Biden says he thinks President Trump will try to delay the November election. Biden did not provide any evidence for this charge.
Trump is somehow going to move the election. It's just so dumb. I mean, I can't believe, you know, we have to cover this, but we do because it was brought up by a major party candidate.
This is an attempt to frighten people. This is all the Democrats have. Is an effort to frighten their own people into thinking that this is going to be some kind of a coup. Whereas, in fact, the president, I think, is looking forward to this, clearly wants to have an election, and this is all the Democrats have, into looking suspiciously at the president. I think they'll fail here.
Joe Biden making a 2020 prediction. He thinks President Trump is going to push back the election. What's that about? Pay attention to the last sentence.
Okay, so the what's that about from Stuart Varney, we're going to return to that in just a minute. But yeah. JR, it was all over the place. So that's over the course of like a couple of months ago. Joe Biden, crazy Joe Biden, thinks Trump is going to try to delay the election.
How stupid is that? If he ever did that, I would totally reject any and all support for him. He's not like that. That's completely un-American. If a president ever said that, he would be the worst president ever in history. Fast forward to a month later. What an amazing thought by President Trump. Who would have thought you could delay an election? Why didn't we do this before? If everyone's so afraid about the pandemic, why don't we delay it? Sounds like 2 + 2 = 4. It's just, man, the amount of money I can get paid to be a conservative pundit on Fox News is so simple. I threw off 4 or 5 of those lines just because I'm being annoying right now, mm-hmm. just in mimicking them. But that sentence would have given me a contributor position, Fox News, and paid me $2 million to show up once a week just to say that.
Yeah, you know, I really wish sometimes that we had loaded your a few months later. Because, you know, you laid out perfect hypothetical, but it ain't just hypothetical. So there, Stuart Varney ending with, what's up with that? Which is one of my favorite phrases for reasons most of the fans don't know. But anyway, so that was Stuart Varney back a couple of months ago. This is crazy. Joe Biden thinks he's going to delay the election. So now Trump tweets, hey, maybe we delay the election, which means that Stuart Varney is going to have to seriously look back at what he's said before and change based. No, none of that's true. Here he is today.
Came out about 20, 30 minutes ago, really riling the markets and roiling politics. Pay attention to the last sentence. Delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote. Come in, please, Senator John Barrasso, Republican from Wyoming. Delay the vote? What do you say, Mr. Senator? I do apologize for interrupting you, but if we have mail-in balloting the way it's scheduled now, there is absolutely no way you will get an election result on election night or even in the first few days. That means confusion and endless challenges. That is a mess. What do you think? Delay the election? You can't start counting mail-in ballots until the day of the election. And in some places, you can't start counting until you've checked every mail-in ballot for the right postmark. I mean, it's a mess, Senator.
Okay, so that is perfect. Because, look, John Barrasso, Senator's on. And he was to his credit, I guess, saying, yeah, Constitution, we should do it on the day we're supposed to do. But there, Stuart Varney suggested delaying the election more times than Trump has. He just kept saying, what say you? What do you think? Kind of a good idea. It's a real mess. Might need to do it. Delay the election? Crazy Joe Biden?
Yeah. When is someone then going to finally ask? And, you know, of course, John Barrasso is not going to ask. Like, hey, Stuart, when did you change your mind on this? Why did you change your mind on this? Did you change your mind strictly because the president said so? And every one of those other people that have gone through this whole thing that never have to answer for their previous statements, which stay and stick. If a month ago people are believing this and thinking that it's crazy that he would do such a thing, if he did so, I would hate him. Why won't they follow up and now hate him? Hey, stand by your principles that we all know you don't have, or just admit that you don't have any. Just go with it. Be like, anything that President Trump says, I'm going with because I'm afraid of him. Say it. Say it. We already know it's the truth. Just say it. You're afraid of him. Anything he says goes. You like a dictator. That lady in that one promo we run that was at that event, and she goes, I'm not a believer in dictatorships, but if there is, I think it should be Trump. She's being honest. At least she's being honest.
Well, and there was a big poll, I think, back in 2017 where they asked, and I don't remember the exact number. I should have had that ready. But they asked Republicans if Trump decided that we needed to postpone the election. This is like 3 years before the election, by the way. Would you support it? And a significant chunk were like, well, we do have all the power. Yes, I do. I love that. Yeah. Of course they love that. Of course. Nobody gets to be surprised about that. Yeah, and Stuart Varney, in terms of changing his mind, that implies that there's a mind. No, there's just things being said. He didn't change his mind. We've always been at war with East Asia. Like, it's always been that. No, he's never going to have to answer for that. That's the bubble. So today, with Donald Trump saying that he is looking to potentially delay the election, which of course he can't do, but that might not stop him, Tim Kaine had Mike Pompeo testify. He decided to ask him about it, and here's what happened.
You are one of the most highly trained and accomplished lawyers who are part of this administration. Can a president delay a presidential election?
Senator, the Department of Justice, others will make that legal determination. We all should want, I know you do too, Senator Kaine, want to make sure we have an election that everyone is confident in. That's not only free.
Are you indifferent to the date of the election?
It should happen lawfully.
Right.
Yeah.
It should happen lawfully.
So that should have been pretty cut and dried. And look what he said. He's like, you know, we want to make sure that it's not compromised. There's a lot of problems, which seems to be setting up that it could, in theory, need to be delayed. And are you agnostic to the date? Well, it needs to be done lawfully. No, just say it. The law is that it happens on this date. That's what the law is. And he is not committed to that. Mike Pompeo. And I know at the end of the day, it is up to Mike Pompeo, but he's the Trump thug that we've got to talk to right now, and that's what he had to say. Yeah, well, you know, he initially didn't want to comment on it. Who can say? What does the law say? Who knows? There's a lot of pages. It's tough.
Yeah, it'll give you an indication as to the way the rest of people that are surrounding Trump will go about this. That's always hard. You definitely, especially if one to the level of Mike Pompeo skirts and kind of dances around the answer that way. What do you think about the whole rest of the people that are surrounding him? Of course they're not going to say anything. Or if they thought that they would say anything, they're going to look at this example and go, okay, if I say something now, my neck is out on the line against Trump and Mike Pompeo and probably everyone else that's involved that's in the higher levels of this whole administration. That's how it works. He can't do it alone. He needs other people that are quote-unquote powerful, like Mike Pompeo, to go, okay, the president, even if you want to put it nicely, the president was just speaking a little bit quicker than he was thinking, and he doesn't really mean that. It seems like a thing he's just concerned about the election. You could go that way and deny what he's saying. You could say it nicely, but he doesn't want to because he is a part of the same problem. He is okay with this.
Yeah, and look, I get it. He says it. It's a distraction or whatever. It's always just a distraction until he starts doing it. Remember when we should slow down the testing was a distraction, then they tried to cut funding for the testing,
Absolutely.
And there's no national strategy? So again, look, I have to assume – that if you watch this show, you understand that we get that whole ruse, and we're not gonna fall for it. Yeah, it's just a distraction until it's the reality that we exist in. So I understand some people will say, well, John, you've got Trump derangement syndrome. You're freaking out. You're always going to freak out. Okay, well, then make me look crazy, Trump government. Make me look crazy by answering the question saying, no, of course we're not going to delay the election. Be very clear. Now, yes, there are some elected Republicans that are saying that. And I'm going to give you a few examples. But right there, you saw Mike Pompeo, one of the most powerful people in D.C., implying that there might be justification for delaying it, and who knows what might end up happening, while pretending that he cares. But it isn't just him. Let's see, we've got Manu Raju, reporters in D.C. this morning, and he's tracking out as many senators as possible. And so Senator Lindsey Graham told him this morning about Trump's call to delay the election, quote, "I don't think that's a particularly good idea." He declined further comment for obvious reasons. He's afraid. And the funny thing is, I forget exactly who, I believe it's someone who works for Media Matters, back in 2017 tweeted, sort of like a future headline, Lindsey Graham extremely worried about Trump call to delay election. And we're there. It didn't even take that long. Joni Ernst says not answering any questions. Doesn't seem like it should be that tough, but she's in a tough race and she doesn't want Donald Trump mad at her. So then we have Senator Kevin Cramer, Republican, told Manu Raju he thinks Trump's tweet is meant as a distraction. Quote, "I think that if you guys take the bait, he'll be the happiest guy in town. I read it. I laughed. I thought, my gosh, this is going to consume a lot of people, except real people. And it was clever."
It's clever
to talk about not abiding by the law or the Constitution and just, extending his reign forever. That's funny. Why are you guys taking the bait from what the president says?
So it turned from crazed Democrats and libs and never Trumpers saying he would do something like this to then them saying it was very clever of him to do something like this. So you clown on the people that said he would do it. Why not when the never Trumpers and libs said he would do this? Why didn't you go, "Hey, that's a clever joke, you libs and you dims. You guys make me laugh so much. That's clever. Do you say he would say that? Ha ha, I love you." No, but once he finally does it, suddenly you love him. It's clever. Can't believe he tweaked the media this way. That is the one aspect of my rant as a conservative that I missed. He was joking. That's the one we missed.
Yeah.
He was joking. He was doing it to tweak you, and he's getting you. He got you, didn't he?
Exactly. Yeah, it's the government version of the thing that right-wingers do, where they say something incredibly offensive, stupid, bigoted, and then they wait to find out, based on the reaction, whether they were joking or not. And if the reaction's really negative, then I'm just joking. Why do you hate comedy? Except that in this case, it's him talking about something that he could theoretically actually do. And then you have people like Tom Tillis, who start off well and then fall off, saying to Manu Raju, "The election is going to happen in November, period," which isn't as precise as I would like, but still November. Okay, good. Then asked if it was appropriate for the president to question the integrity of the elections. He said, "Talk to my staff." Oh, which members of your staff were elected by the American people to answer questions like this? Just you? You're the one. But yeah, you're going to run away.
I haven't read up on my talking points yet, is what Tillis' answer was. And the second half of who was our first senator? Maybe it was Lindsey Graham. Yeah, when he first came out, and he said, "Yeah, I don't think that's really going to happen." And then he cut himself off because that next thought was, "I've already said too much."
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And God knows what's going to happen to me. And we've seen Trump turn on them, and they are more committed to, especially in a tough election year, maintaining their seat in their career and their access to power and their access to eventually getting a big lobbying job than they are to maintaining our system of government. Despite all of their talk for traditions, democracy is not a tradition that they're particularly interested in.
Not at all.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
A number of very high-profile, both celebrities and people involved in politics, have tragically passed during this pandemic. Today we have another, with Herman Cain, the former Republican presidential candidate and business executive who was hospitalized this month with the coronavirus, being announced to have died. He was 74. He was the former chief executive of Godfather's Pizza and, you know, like I said, a presidential candidate. He tested positive for the virus on June 29th and went to the hospital 2 days later, which means that he was in the hospital for basically a month, much of it on a ventilator in incredibly, you know, it's a very difficult situation. And like we always say, my heart goes out to everyone that knows him, his family. I have a family member who is on a ventilator right now. I don't know how specific I want to be, but any day now could be the last day. So my heart goes out to anyone who has experienced that or is currently experiencing that.
Yeah, it's no, it's weird because I literally just thought about Herman Cain again 2 days ago. And Jesus, who's been with the TYT since forever, he randomly sent me a message, and he is, you see these tweets from Herman Cain's people about his condition. And this is like, again, that day that I was thinking about it. And it's just, it's odd because as serious as it is and as serious as we all know it is, we haven't seen a figure from this side of the aisle that is that connected and that directly supportive of everything that this administration is doing mm-hmm. and their lack of response to coronavirus actually pass away from. We've seen multiple people get it. And then that's become their claim to an additional part of their claim that this is no big deal.
Yeah.
So now, you know, questions are going to be asked and they're not going to get answered because, you know, now there's a guy that's dead. And it's weird because, like I said, it came up to my head and I was oddly like, it's like I saw it coming almost, but then I feel really bad for his people that didn't participate in his political life to push such a narrative. Because it's very dangerous what he was doing. And it's also worse what his staff was doing in his name while he was hospitalized and obviously deteriorating. His condition was deteriorating for over a month, or for around a month.
Yeah.
And honestly, the first people I think about are people's family and friends that actually cared about them. And these types of things are what was tweeted. This is on July 29th. Yesterday. So he says, our government and our media, this is under Herman Cain's blue checked Twitter account. Our government and our media have incinerated their credibility. So is it any wonder that people are skeptical? And it links this article written on HermanCain.com, which is obviously written by a writer, and they don't hide that. They're not acting like he wrote this. But there was one aspect of this. I just want to read this small section. And it says, American media outlets, like the government officials they cover, have absolutely incinerated their credibility. They've lied, fudged, and hedged so often that literally no one accepts what they say at face value. There's always a bias, always an angle, and always a double standard. This is an article written under Herman Cain's name, posted to his Twitter account while he is literally dying in the hospital. It's heartless, it's cold, and then when this guy has been basically sacrificed his life for your false narrative, and then died because of that false narrative, you continue to use his name and his face and his supporters to talk to his supporters about how it's still just madness that the media keeps pushing this. And this particular article is about potential vaccines and how this writer is actually in support of a vaccine and using it, but that many Americans are not going to take the vaccine. And the reason many Americans aren't going to take the vaccine is because of the media, not because of the people that continue to use this guy's name to push this false narrative that now vaccines aren't going to be that much of a big deal. Trust, it's coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry, man. So even the people, everyone who thinks they're on their side, they're on this conservative Trump administration side of this virus. If you die, this is proof that they don't give a damn about you. They don't care. You're another number. You've served your purpose. Get in the ground. Who's next?
Yeah.
That's all we've got now. That's all they've got. They don't care. They never cared. So when someone says, hey, the people you're trying to keep in office, actually don't care if you live, they're going to go, no, it's totally American. It's patriotic. He waved a flag. He said, yeah, America. That's what's convinced you.
Yeah.
When you're dead, you can't fight anymore. You can no more arguing. Herman Cain is no longer going to tell us what he really thinks.
And
we got prayers now. Hey, we saw Kayleigh McEnany talking about prayers and support for his family. Where were the prayers and support for his family before he died?
Before he got sick?
There, man. Not there. Instead, it was tweets while he's dying. While he's dying. Here's another one. There's a post about the Miami Marlins and 16 people on the team testing positive because of some event that happened. Herman Cain tweets on July 27th. Thank God baseball didn't panic like the media wanted. Is Herman Cain panicking right now? No, he's dead, bro. So panic like the media wanted to. And there's 16 more people on this baseball team that have a chance to deteriorate, die, or just be sick for long enough that their whole life changes. Or maybe they spread it on to someone else who gets sick or dies. This isn't a joke. But they don't care, man. Money's being made. Political positions are being held. Power's being exchanged. That's all they want. When someone on their team, because there's this American teams of politics, dies, oh, who cares? Move on. Especially Herman Cain. He was 74. He was one of the vulnerable ones. Maybe he should have worn a mask. You guys are going to start blaming him, and then you're also going to start talking trash about the people who are bringing this up and say that they're heartless. The people talking about this are the heartless ones, not the people who exploited him and used his name to continue pushing this false narrative that kills Americans every day.
And if it's acknowledged, like if Trump tweets about him, what's the chance that he doesn't undercut it in some way? You know, stressing that he was older or that he had a, you know, underlying condition. He apparently had dealt with cancer. Like, will he just express regret that this person who supported him so much and backed up his narrative, as you so rightfully pointed out, died? Will he just acknowledge that, or will he try to twist even his death to fit the narrative? Will Fox News, if they acknowledge it, will they twist that? And so, look, obviously, like we said, both of us feel terrible for his family, and he didn't need to die. He was 74. He could have lived 5 more years, or 10, or maybe 20 more years, and he didn't. He didn't have to. Some people were always going to die from coronavirus. We've been saying that since literally before it hit the United States. But it does not need to be anything like it is. And so now, a lot of people are questioning, is this a result of Donald Trump? Not in a general sense, for completely fumbling the response to COVID, but in particular for having the Tulsa rally that Herman Cain visited about 9 days before he was tested positive, and about 11 days, I believe, before he went to the hospital. Well, now Herman Cain, while he was at that event, tweeted that he was wearing a mask. I think he might have put up one video of him wearing a mask, but we do know that he wasn't wearing one the entire time. He posted photos of him in groups of people who were similarly not wearing masks. And remember, this is after we found out that 6 staffers at the event had tested positive already. And we know from watching footage of the event that the vast, vast majority of the people there were not wearing masks, and they'd traveled from far and wide to come and congregate inside in a big group. And so the idea that he was potentially exposed at that point, it appears to make sense in terms of the timeline, when he got sick and when the symptoms got bad enough that he was sent to the hospital. We can't know for sure, but I don't think it's irrational to wonder if that event, which we warned about for weeks before it even happened, that someone could end up dying, that we'll never know for sure. It's impossible to know for sure, but that Herman Cain might have been one of those individuals.
Yo, it doesn't even matter. If he got it from the rally that he was boasting and surrounding himself with people. By the way, all the people sitting around him at that rally, get yourself checked out. You probably already do because, you know, the people in these types of positions have access to tests that most Americans may not. So just consider what you've been up to. And by the way, if it wasn't at the Tulsa rally, it was somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Who cares where he got it from? He was being irresponsible and telling everybody to be just as irresponsible as he was being. I don't care where he got it. So because if there's a 5-day incubation period and this was 9 days after, suddenly that changes everything. I thought you guys didn't believe any of the science. So what about the 5-day incubation period that you said? So if they start to push, it was 9 days later. So therefore, it's not that much of a big deal. He couldn't have gotten it there. I thought you didn't believe in the science. And if it's 9 days instead of 5, okay, follow wherever else he went and got it. Are you going to start denying that he had it? That's next. I'm sure they're going to deny that he even had it, or that he didn't die of it, that he only had it, and then something else happened at the hospital that caused him to die. It had nothing to do with COVID. That's next up on the slate. Yeah. Has Donald Trump said anything about Herman Cain yet today?
I haven't seen it. You know, I will continue to check as we're doing this, but I hadn't seen it. But honestly, it's one of those things where it's like, do you want him to? Do you really want him to? God knows what he's going to say and what they're going to say. I know, you know, John Roberts talked about it on Fox News earlier today, and he said that you know, Herman Cain tested negative the day of the event. So that's acknowledging, you know, some facts about it. They are talking about it, but that's like the news side. What is Tucker Carlson going to say about this? And the thing is, like, as we're going to show you, Herman Cain was a Fox News person. He was on Fox News. He was on Fox Business. They loved him. He was a presidential candidate. He did pretty well at one point. He could have been their nominee. This is a high-profile Republican, not like, you know, elected office for a long time or anything like that, but outside of that, a very high-profile Republican. And he could have never imagined that this would be his end. So Herman Cain has tragically passed from coronavirus, and, you know, it's just so brutal to think that this individual lost years of his life. And the thing is, and, like, we know that he wasn't doing everything necessary, just like a lot of Americans, to not expose himself to the virus. But the thing is, he not only was misled, obviously, by Trump and by Fox News and the rest of them, but early on, at least, he did some of the misleading. So I want to show you just a second. And, you know, bear in mind, absolute tragedy for him, for himself, for everyone who knows him, who is still suffering. I can't imagine, since I'm currently experiencing it. But, like, it's so brutal for any individual, and to think of those 150,000 plus families and groups of friends that have suffered from losing someone. Here is a bit of Herman Cain on Fox Business back on March 4th, back at the very beginning of this thing.
It's called leadership, Charles. And I'm glad that we've got a true leader in the office of the president. It's called leadership, and he's demonstrated that he is up to the test. And yes, it is a test that he didn't expect, because we didn't expect the coronavirus, number one. And number two, I believe that he's making all of the right moves that he can. He limited access to the United States at the end of January. He got right out in front of this. And secondly, he is listening to the health professionals. And then one other great thing that he did, knowing that he still has to be president of the United States, he put Vice President Pence in charge of the team. I think that that shows strong leadership, but more importantly, he has shown that he's willing to listen to those who are the experts in this health field as it comes to this virus. Unfortunately, and obviously we pray for the comfort of the families of those who lost loved ones, most of them have had underlying medical conditions, because as you get older, your resistance and your ability, the ability of your system to fight off different viruses and diseases, right, becomes weaker and weaker. And so the good news is most people under 40 have been able to recover and have been able to go home. The first 14 cases that were identified here in the United States, little it be known by a lot of people that in fact most of them have been cured, right, released, and right, gone home. So you're right, it's unfortunate that we still have some cases, but when you put it into proper perspective in terms of how some other countries have not contained it, the United States is doing a great job.
So, yeah, and that was when 11 people had died. And just, oh, God, he had so much faith in Donald Trump to take care of this, that Donald Trump was going to listen to the doctors. He even says there, like, it's killing people who are older and have underlying conditions. He was one of those people, but he was part of this thing that believed that that's true. I can acknowledge it on Fox News, but I don't have to actually protect myself. And I know he's an individual. He's responsible for what he does, but he's also part of a movement that was led by Donald Trump. If Donald Trump on day one had told people, this is serious, this is a challenge, we're going to meet, everyone's going to take it seriously, we're going to listen to the doctors, we're going to wear masks, we're going to test everybody. Do you really think that these individuals, either the Tucker Carlsons and the Sean Hannitys, or the Herman Cains and the Ron DeSantises and all of that, would be like, you know what? No, finally, this is a step too far. We're breaking from you, Trump. We don't believe any of this stuff. No, they would have all gone along with it if only he had taken it seriously. And so many lives, including the lives of the people involved in this thing, could have been saved.
Yep. And then so this whole huge news story today is because Herman Cain, former presidential candidate, founder of Godfather's Pizza, Trump supporter, conservative, dies today. Or I don't know when it was, maybe it was late last night. I don't know exactly. So this has become a huge news story. What is our numbers in America for deaths? Where are we? Have we hit 150,000 yet?
150,000 plus, yes.
Okay. 150,000 other family and friends of victims of this virus have passed away, right? Just as gruesome as Herman Cain probably did. And we got this, at least for me, we've got this anger and this frustration and outrage over the way they've handled this. People that are affected from 150,000, just Americans, other people in this country, have to deal with that same rage, that same disappointment, that same anger at what has happened in our country. So it's actually a little bit, it's horrible that this is what brings this much anger. Every time someone dies that we just write off and say, hey, die for the cause or go back to work. And what about our stock market? What about my investments? How about my business? All those people that die, this is what you think of them until it hits you at home. And it's actually, I feel kind of bad that this is what's angered me to this point already. Because every other one of them has angered me too, but it's hard to get angry 150,000 times over a few month period.
Yeah.
That's what's happened. Understand this many more people are enraged over this and are looking at the response that has been happening and the continued stupidity surrounding it. And they're I don't know, man. Maybe they're tired of it, or maybe they're not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So yesterday it was revealed that Representative Louie Gohmert, a Republican, had tested positive for coronavirus after spending months telling people that it's not serious, easy to cure, not wearing masks, exposing people around him, both his staff and his colleagues in Congress as well. And, you know, he was on Sean Hannity last night talking about the fact that he had tested positive, and he has a theory exact as to how he actually got it.
I can't help but think that if I haven't been wearing a mask so much in the last 10 days or so, I really wonder if I would have gotten it. But I know, you know, moving the mask around, getting just right, I'm bound to put some virus on the mask that I sucked in. That's most likely what happened.
The Republicans attack AOC for being stupid every day. And these are their heroes. The guy that thinks that the mask is the thing that gave him coronavirus.
The mask is the thing because apparently he believes it was on his hands and he shifted his mask too much. So it was on your hands. Where were your hands? Mm-hmm. Why weren't your hands clean? Why aren't you wearing gloves if you think your hands were the things that got you on there? Every time you touch something, you should have like a box full of reusable gloves. Take that set off every time you touch something. If you actually cared. Oh, actually, he told us, I'm not sure if you're getting this, so stop me if you are. Where he's talking about what he would do if he had caught it. He told reporters this before. You won't see me without a mask if I catch it. Are we going to see him without a mask? He said, you're not going to see me without a mask. I'm sorry if I misspoke that. You're not going to see me without a mask if
I'll take it seriously.
We should see him every day with a mask then, right? Until he sets it up to say, the mask gave me this virus, so therefore I don't think I should wear it. It's a circle of stupidity that just, it checks itself out. And he's prepared to go that route. He also forced his staff members to not wear masks and berated them for not
berated
doing
them.
Many other elected officials are doing the same thing.
Pro-life tries to expose the people who work for him, including poorly paid interns, to a fatal illness. Now, you made reference to a circle of stupidity. So he undercut it, pretended it wasn't serious, potentially exposed himself and others and all that. Then he ends up getting it. He says that the reason he got it was because of PPE. So we have one more video of him. I don't know if you've seen this. What would close this stupidity loop? Now that he has it, what stupid thing could he do? You got any guesses? Anyone in the chat?
Where Gohmert's going next?
Yeah, I have one more video. Yeah. What's the next stupid step in this stupid circle?
Oh,
I know, I'm putting you on the spot, I know.
I guess I already revealed my guess. My guess would be that he's going to announce that he's not wearing masks because masks give corona.
Well, you're right. Yes. Okay, that is a good one. But there is one additional step. And anyone who's been watching this season of America should know that that next step is, of course, going to involve putting himself on hydroxychloroquine.
My doctor and I are all in. And I got a text just before I came on from a dear friend doctor that just found out he had it. And he said he started the DQ regimen too. So zinc, erythromycin, and the hydroxychloroquine. And that will start just in the next day or two. Yep. So thank you.
He's on with Sean Hannity. And Sean Hannity, his job is to tell people to take this medicine. He knows that it doesn't actually cure it. Multiple studies have shown that, and that it could cause heart damage itself. And Louis Gohmert's an older guy. Last thing he needs is unnecessary heart damage. But Sean Hannity is so committed to this grift that he was telling Louis Gohmert, you should take hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
You should be the next to die for this narrative. And Louis Gohmert is he's a good Republican. So he is lining up to potentially be the next. And I really hope that he isn't. I hope that he didn't expose any of his interns or any of his colleagues, any member of his family. There's the chance that he did. I hope that they're well, and I hope that he survives this perfectly fine without any ongoing health problems. But he is doing everything he can now to make sure that my wishes do not come true.
Yeah, let's keep it real. Let's keep it real. He's probably not going to take it. he's going to say he's taking it because no matter what, no matter who dies, no matter who gets infected by it, you got to continue the line. Because the dear leader is continuing the line. It's time for you to continue the line. Just say it. Hey, so Lou, you don't really have to take hydroxychloroquine, which you can't even pronounce. You don't even have to take it. Just say you're taking it so we can put more people in danger or continue this same narrative. Just say it. We're actors anyway. We don't really mean what we're saying and doing after all. So let's just continue that. He's not taking it. A doctor friend? He didn't go to a doctor. He went to a friend that's a doctor. What kind of doctor?
God only knows. I mean, so what was Trump doing for the pandemic in the week that Herman Cain passes away and Louis Gohmert gets infected, or at least tests positive? Trump was amplifying the demon semen woman, the person who thinks that homosexuality is a demonic plot and astral witches are having sex with you in your sleep and giving you diseases as a result of that. But that astral witch disease could be treated by the alien DNA that doctors use. That's what he did that week. Donald Trump is down in the polls and has been for months, and so he's got a new strategy. Racism plus classism. Take a look at this. He tweeted, I am happy to inform all of the people living their capital suburban lifestyle dream that you will no longer be bothered or financially hurt by having low-income housing built in your neighborhood. Your housing prices will go up based on the market, and crime will go down. I have rescinded the Obama-Biden AFFH rule. Enjoy to your suburban lifestyle dream, which has been a nightmare thanks to the scourge of low-income housing.
We don't even have the conversation anymore. You know, there's... So the guy has to say the N-word in order for us to go ahead and believe it. We don't. Honestly, the people who don't want to believe it aren't going to believe it then either. Or they're going to say there's a reason why he had to say it or whatever. Who cares? Since he first went down the escalator and made a declaration against Mexicans specifically, that they're criminals and drug dealers and rapists and murderers and all this stuff. It doesn't need to be any more proving needs to be put into place for people who don't believe it. The people that he's speaking to already know. They already know. They believe it and they love it. That's who he's speaking to. And let's keep it real. He's finally losing with suburban voters. And he thinks this is the key. And he also calls them the housewives of America because he lives in 1952. Mm-hmm. So he continues the same push. Oh, I know how to get the suburban people behind me. They're racist like I am, right? Let's go that way. Because when you're a rabid racist, everything in your orbit is racism. Everything. Anything, the way you think about anything is based in racism. The way you watch sports, the way you drive, which he probably doesn't, the people you choose to be around you when you're working, all this is based in explicit racism. So he can't get away from it. His entire life has been built on racism. And of course, handouts to himself. But there's no more surprises here anymore. If anybody said, hey, so guess who said this? You could go, oh, Donald Trump said that. Because no one would be confused as to who said this. No one would say, was it? And by the way, Joe Biden has his problems with his history on his policies and agreeing with racists in office. But no one would hear that and go, I think Joe Biden said that. No, they wouldn't believe he said that because he There's only one guy who's built his entire reputation on it, and it's this guy. At least Joe Biden thinks he can hide his past.
Exactly. It shouldn't surprise me. But, I mean, what is surprising is that, like, my initial reaction is, wow, that seems pretty implicitly racist. But then I realize, wow, that's really explicitly classist. That's, remember, Donald Trump is the everyman. You know, he understands the downtrodden, forgotten Americans who've been left behind and suffered from economic anxiety. Remember, those who've been left behind, lost their jobs, all of that. He is a right-wing populist. And he's campaigning on, I'm going to keep them poors out of your neighborhood. The most elitist position I can imagine. Right-wing populism is a complete and utter sham. From floor to ceiling, it doesn't exist. It is just the racism. That's all it is. And they will accept the classism if it comes with racism. Because they have been taught to ignore their economic concerns by being distracted by the hatred they're supposed to have for everyone with a vaguely different shade of skin color. Jesus. And by the way, this is not new in American politics. We had this ad posted by Michael Beschloss yesterday, 1926 ad, saying, attention white home buyers, the largest restricted white community in Washington, is barring non-white people from moving this neighborhood. So sign up now so that you can be away from these people. That is 8% more explicit than Donald Trump's tweet, and it is 100 years earlier. Man, absolutely, the progress we've made in that time. And bear in mind, this is not the first toe in the water of the pool of racial discrimination in housing from the Trump family. The Justice Department sued Donald Trump, his father, Fred, and Trump management in order to obtain a settlement in which Trump and his father would promise not to discriminate based on race and housing. The lawsuit was based on evidence gathered by testers for the New York City Human Rights Division, which alleged that black people who went to Trump's buildings were told there were no apartments available while white people were offered units. So again, is this just one of those distractions, or is it a continuation of a policy that he has already practiced in his own personal career and economic life? He already wanted to spare white people from having to live with anyone who didn't look exactly like them. Now he just wants to move it out of the condos and across the country, and he's promising suburban lifestyle dreams by blocking these people.
Yep, he thinks it's going to get him reelected. So obviously, I think there should be pretty easy follow-up questions to this line of thinking, since he's so proud of this, you know, this push. Just asking, okay, so Mr. President, you are concerned about, deteriorating suburban communities with any kind of fair housing rules and legislation. So do you think fair housing is not a problem? Make him answer that very factual question, because he'll have to deny that fair housing is a problem. That that there's this desegregation that happens, which has been proven again. I mean, the segregation that's happened, which has been proven over and over and over again. Then after he BS's his way through that, then ask him what he thinks he should do next about it. So what should happen with folks that are dealing with the fair housing issue? Where should they go? Do you have another plan for them? Do you want to have these things put in certain other places? Where are your plans to put these fair housing? Are you going to put them in downtown areas where things are getting gentrified, and then cost of living and for a month of rent is $3,500 for a one-bedroom place? Ask him that, since he has all these thoughts and plans that he's putting forth to free up the suburbanites from those dirty black and brown people. What's next then? It's the same thing as when they bring up Chicago just as a scapegoat to be like, Chicago, Chicago, Chicago. Ask him next, what do you want to do about Chicago? Why is Chicago the way it is? What is happening in Chicago? Have you been there? Ask them all these questions, since they care so much. If Trump cares about suburban problems with segregation and fair housing being running in their neighborhood, making it filthy, dirty, and crime infested, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
What do you do about those people? Do you not represent the people? Come on, man.
He lives in a golden castle floating in the clouds. He doesn't care about them. I have no doubt that the classism is honest. He never wants to be near anyone who's not extravagantly wealthy, and he's definitely a racist. But this is also performative. On top of his actual views, it's also performative and insane. But we possibly have a defender. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez responded to Donald Trump's suburban dream tweet about blocking low-income people from moving to the suburbs, a wink and a nudge to racists who don't want black or brown people to move there, by saying that she's happy to inform you that I've already introduced an amendment to block his latest racist, classist nonsense. Now, understand that that tweet is not sort of devoid from actual executive action. Last week, the White House rolled out a surprise rule on fair housing, the new policy, which overrides an existing Obama-era regulation, which Donald Trump made reference to in his tweet, would all but eliminate the federal obligation for state and local governments to demonstrate that they are using federal housing dollars to actively reduce segregation. Now, his champion, Trump's champion on this, has been Housing Secretary Ben Carson, who described the fair housing mandate as social engineering and moved to dial back the rule soon after joining the president's cabinet. He's been working on it for years, and now this is what he's got. Thankfully, AOC has introduced a pair of amendments to an appropriations bill before Congress that would defund this rule as well as another rule before they can take effect. The legislation would prevent any federal funds from being used to implement or adopt the new rules proposed under Housing Secretary Ben Carson, effectively nullifying them. So if she is successful, and if the amendment passes, if the bill then passes and Trump signs it, it would destroy this Trump-Carson effort to stop poor or black or brown people from invading the suburbs, according
to them. Well, let's also keep it real. It's obvious that Ben Carson was put in this position so he could be a black face to these kinds of policies. And he can hide behind that as well and say, hey, it's not me doing it. It's my expert, Ben Carson, former neurosurgeon, should be the face of this push that is racist in its entire nature. It's not me. It's him. But, you know, Ben Carson will sit there and he'll take that mantle and continue to be that face and continue to be the cover. It's not even subtle. They don't have to be anymore. It's like, yeah, my black guy's there. It's not racist. My black guy agrees with me.
Donald Trump has spent the past couple of years trying to interfere with the census, with explicitly racist plans to not do what the Constitution calls for, which is to count everyone for the purposes of allocating political power. It's extremely explicit about that in a way that we've gone over many, many times. He has been blocked along the way many times from doing that. He's tried to add citizenship questions. That has been blocked. Then he announced, as we're going to talk about, that he is going to just subtract the undocumented immigrants, which he is neither allowed to do by law and would be impossible, but that isn't necessarily going to stop him. But now they've got another thing that they're cooking up, because with 93 days until the Census Bureau plans to stop tallying the country's residents at the end of October, roughly 4 out of 10 households nationwide have yet to be included in the constitutionally mandated count that is used to redistribute congressional seats, electoral college votes, and federal funding among states. Now, that is close to half of all households still haven't been counted, and they are saying we can't do it for a number of different reasons, one of which is they have been defunded specifically to interfere with their ability to do it. Secondly, we're in a pandemic, which makes it harder. So, Democrats in both the Senate and the House of Representatives have introduced legislation, including the House Democrats' latest coronavirus relief bill, that would grant 4-month extensions to the legal deadlines in response to requests in April by the Census Bureau and the Commerce Department. They're saying, we need more funding, we need more time so that we can do our job, which is again mandated by the Constitution. But that is not going to stop the White House, which did not respond to NPR's question about whether the White House supports the Census Bureau's request to extend the census deadlines by 4 months. A Trump administration official who spoke on the condition of anonymity did tell NPR that a timely census simply means that it's delivered within the statutory timeline. Now think about the only thing that that could possibly mean. That's saying we have a timeline that has to happen. It needs to be delivered. Is it finished? I don't know. It's done.
Doesn't really matter, does it? Well, actually, it's perfect storm. You want it that way. It's obvious. It's weird that this has to be, you know, apparently in the administration's mind, this has to be a solid timetable. We have to stick to the timetable because this is the way it's been mandated. This is the way it's been put in place. We have to continue on down this road. We just talked about earlier today how Donald Trump is floating this ridiculous idea to postpone the election or delay it, to delay the election. How come that doesn't stick with its own point and stick at that date because it's an American value?
Yeah.
Live up to the Constitution and the rule of law. No, it doesn't matter when it actually affects him negatively for something to be held on the day that it's supposed to be held on. And he's looking real bad right now. Again, none of it is surprising. Also, none of it is even, there's no veil over anything anymore. It's just straightforward. So this is what we do want to happen. Stick to that date. This is what we don't want to have happen. Let's push that date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this is the latest effort. there's many, including the one that we talked about last week. Here is the next 10 to 20 years of the Republican Party. They're caught between two forces, what their donors want and what the Constitution allows, which is representative democracy. And they're going to choose between one of those two things. Sorry, they've already chosen between one of those two things. The Republican Party does not support representative democracy. Free and fair elections, direct election of senators, those sorts of things. So, and I know, I've got Trump derangement syndrome. I'm just crazy. I'm just a crazy leftist who's worried about these sorts of things. No, they are going to turn more and more away from representative democracy, and their base is going to cheer them on every step of the way. Their base, not their constituency, because that implies that they're still getting votes. Their base wants power. They want Republicans to still have power. They want that far more than they want to live in a democracy. That is simply the case, and you don't have to take my word for it. There are polls asking whether people support representative democracy versus some sort of autocratic government, and you can see it year by year switching for conservatives. They are more and more against actual democracy, and willing to say it, by the way, which means that far more aren't willing to say it but would go along with it. They just don't actually support representative democracy. And for the Republicans to compete and not have to change their positions, which they can't do, and keep their donors happy, they're going to suppress the vote, try to manipulate the census, gerrymander, all of that. And they're doing it right now. Delay elections, cancel elections, God only knows. So get ready for that. This might seem like a boring story about the census and deadlines and appropriations and things like that. This is the battleground that the fight for democracy is being waged on. And there are many battles, and it's on us to track them. It's hard. It's onerous. I'm tired. JR was just saying he's tired. I'm sure you're tired, too. But this is what's going on. Do we want a democracy, and what will we do to make sure that we have it?
I remember, the first couple of notifications for the census I got in the mail, you know, they ended up on the mail table. I'm sure everyone has a section in their house where mail starts piling. And I go, I haven't opened that yet. And then I started getting like the third notice that this is your legal obligation to do so. Weird. I get those types of flyers that tell me it's a legal obligation to answer to the census and let them know who you are and where you are and all that stuff. Household things. But for some reason, there's no legal obligation for the president or for the people that's surrounding him to do their part to make sure it's accurate and everything is coming into play.
Yeah.
It's our legal obligation to do our part, but it's not theirs. It's the story of America at this point in our existence. Everyone else do that part. People in power, maybe not. If it helps me, yeah. If not, no.
Yeah. Okay, Jar, before you go, I want to read one comment and one super chat so that you can see it, but then we're going to say goodbye to you, and I'll respond to more after. Okay. I just thought it was funny that Mandy Moore is watching, sent in a comment saying, suburban lifestyle dream, a hideous orange paint color. It does sound like it. Surf Psych thinks it's an ice cream flavor. So anyway, and then you have Rachel Rhodes, who sent in an extremely generous super chat. Thank you, Rachel, saying, full disclosure, I know nothing about the comic book universe. That being said, as a scared millennial living alone, please know that you guys are my Justice League of America. Had to look that one up. John, JR, Franny, Emma, Jordan, Brett, you're all my heroes. Thank you, Rachel. That's incredibly sweet.
Aww.
And I'm glad that you recognize the expanded TDR universe, the TDR cinematic universe. Anyway,
oh, man, it's got to be a thing. Hey, this is going to branch out. TDR is going to be the beginnings of a branch of an entire string of thought-provoking, John-like shows, and they're going to be called TDR Universe. It's like a coaching tree.
Well, someone already suggested I have to have a board game channel, so it's going to be the Cardboard Report, and it's coming to a non-existent channel near you. Anyway, JR, thank you so much. Always good to have you on.
I'm glad it was today. No, I needed all that off my chest. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate
as usual,
it.
I love you.
Thank you. Stay safe out there. Just 2 weeks ago, we were shocked to find out that Tucker Carlson over at Fox News had a avowed vicious racist as his head writer. Not that it existed, but that we found out and that he actually got fired. I'm surprised he didn't get promoted to his own show. And the thing is that makes it so unsurprising is that Tucker Carlson's show has been parroting white nationalist and white supremacist talking points for some time. And we are very lucky now to be joined on the show by an individual who's been profiling this, especially recently on Business Insider columnist Manny Fidel. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks, John. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on. You've been doing some great work about how Fox has become sort of the home of this sort of thing. Tell me a little bit about what you've turned up in watching Fox, analyzing Tucker Carlson and other shows.
Yeah, for sure. So the biggest thing that has come up in watching these shows is this kind of rhetoric that is based around something called the Great Replacement, which is the Great Replacement is a white supremacist conspiracy theory, for lack of a better term, that that describes communities of color maliciously trying to replace white communities in the United States. And you see, that conspiracy theory is, parroted much more bluntly online and much more directly. But on shows like Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham, they kind of do it in like a lighter way, so it's not so easily tied to the conspiracy theory. And they'll do things like say, Tucker Carlson will say that this town used to be like this percentage white, and now it's, it's dwindling. And Laura Ingraham says things like, America is not what it used to be. So these are the kind of ways that Fox News will put that conspiracy theory onto their airwaves in front of millions of viewers.
And so, like, when Bill O'Reilly says that traditional America is going away, do you see that as largely following this sort of narrative?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the way these things are being said on like Stormfront or like other online forums that are just much more explicitly racist, they say the exact same things.
Mm-hmm. And so that gap that you've identified, where it's far more explicit on some of these websites like Stormfront or 4chan or something like that, and then they have versions of alluding to it on Ingraham and Tucker Carlson, is that changing over the years? I mean, was Fox talking about this sort of thing, say, 5 or 10 years ago in the way that they are now?
That's a great question. I don't think so. I think what's happening is, obviously, with the election of Donald Trump, who likes to kind of stoke those flames of white supremacy, that's where like this whole phenomenon is starting to get stronger and stronger. But the reason it's much more dangerous now is because the ways that these hosts on Fox News say these things, they don't come off as immediately racist. Well, they do for some of us, but for a lot of their viewers, they probably don't think much of it in terms of racism. So yeah. It's something that's, it's something that spreads without its real intent being known.
And, sort of to that point, I alluded in the intro to the fact that Tucker Carlson had to fire his head writer, who had been, name a racist thing. He was saying it online. What did you think when that story broke? And then the way that it was resolved and sort of moved past fairly quickly, was that what you expected, or do you think that there would be more consequences?
That my reaction was kind of two-pronged, which is when first the news broke, it's always surprising hearing these things, but to some degree, it was one of the least surprising revelations they could have made. Because we hear, this is a writer on the show who has said racist things in the past, and it's a show that constantly parrots this great supremacy, great replacement conspiracy. So it wasn't that surprising, but what was a little surprising for me was that the show's reaction, like from a production standpoint, was this like pseudo apology. But like anytime you're apologizing for something, and it's not like a full on apology. He basically said sorry, but. And then like the but portion of that was just shocking to me. I couldn't understand how this person who's explicitly racist was revealed to be a writer for you, and you didn't just fully disavow it.
Mm-hmm. And I know, so you've talked about the fact that they're generally pretty careful. They try to cover their tracks, make it a little bit more vague. It's washed slightly from the forums to prime time. But then I think about things like Tucker Carlson talking about the white genocide against farmers in South Africa, or him bringing on guests who like promote the Camp of the Saints, possibly the most racist book ever written. Are those like trial balloons? Is he seeing what he can get away with? Is it a preview of the future? Is this going to become more explicit in the future?
Yeah, so I mean, you're describing what is essentially like the dog whistle is now just like a full air horn. I think you're spot on. It's like, here, let me describe this story that's attracting a lot of specific people, and see how it plays over. And so, like some of us in the media calling those kind of stories out, or else they'll snowball into one day a full on great replacement segment on Tucker Carlson.
Yeah. Yeah, probably Lou Dobbs as well. Here's one thing I would like your help with, because I know that you have to watch the way that these narratives are spread and how they spread. One of the things that's interested me, especially over the past few years, is that there is this relationship between Fox News and Donald Trump. That he's been very explicit from the beginning that he watches a lot of Fox News. We know that he live tweets it and things like that. He becomes obsessed with the things that they talk about. But we also know that sometimes they will work to amplify things that he's become obsessed with. So like with hydroxychloroquine, it seems like Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham sort of got him interested in that. But he seems to have sort of led, from my perception, on, for instance, rejecting wearing masks, that they had previously on Fox News been supportive of it, but then he's against it. So that relationship, what's driving it? Is it random? Is there any way that we can sort of try to understand how these messages are going to spread between the government side of Trump and the media side of Trump?
To my knowledge, it seems like there are a few people at Fox News who can influence Trump to have X opinion. And those are the pundits. Those are like the Lauren Ingrams and the Tucker Carlsons. They might say something and Trump might be watching, and all of a sudden he's saying it too. The reverse of that relationship is when Trump says something, and then like a show like Fox and Friends will amplify that. So it's just so because Fox News as a business or as a corporation is multifaceted in its personnel, I think it just depends on who the show or what the show is and who the person is, where you get that kind of point A to point B relationship in terms of a narrative.
And you know, this relationship between Fox News, the Republicans, and what's going on politically, I wanted to reference a past bit of your work that talked about sort of their responsibility for helping democratic socialism to sort of rise up. I think that's super interesting. What's the link there?
So that the idea behind that opinion was that Democrats will come out with some law that's pretty centrist by all means, and then Republicans will respond to that law by calling it all kinds of crazy socialism. And what that does is amplifies that law, and it also creates. So, all right, let me give you one like hardcore example, which is the environment. So Obama, the centrist, came out, did all these like environmental things we applauded him for. And when Trump came into office, they kind of rescinded all that stuff, and it created a worse environment. And now, because of this worse environment, we are forced to bring up our support for things like the Green New Deal, which the things Obama was doing in the first place were called socialist. And now, like as things get closer and closer to actual democratic socialism, like this just wouldn't have happened if Republicans weren't overreacting in the first place. So that's just kind of how I there's a couple other examples like Obamacare, but that's how I see socialism, the need for democratic socialism growing.
And possibly the acceptance of it. I mean, if they're calling Joe Biden a crazy radical leftist, and then they call Bernie Sanders a crazy radical leftist, it seems like that sort of numbs people to the scariness of that label. When you're applying it to Pete Buttigieg and AOC, you've stripped it of any meaning for your intended audience at the very least.
Especially because, you're grouping Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, who in any other country in the world would not be in the same political party.
Exactly. So your latest video for Business Insider is on the use of white supremacist rhetoric over on Fox News. Everyone watching that should definitely go take a look. And you're a columnist for Business Insider as well. Manny Fidel, thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate your work.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Coming up on Monday, August 3rd, TYT is going to be airing Parkland Rising. This is a new documentary that profiles the 2018 mass shooting that took place at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School that tragically took the lives of 17 individuals, including one, Jamie, the daughter of our guest who joins us once again on the show. Fred Guttenberg, welcome to the Damage Report.
How are you doing?
We're glad to have you on. As always, unfortunate topic, but you've been engaged in a number of different efforts to try to bring a little bit more justice to the world in this area of needless gun violence. And the most recent, Parkland Rising. Tell me a little bit about the documentary, how it got started, and what you're hoping it'll accomplish.
You know, you've spoken to some of the people who were involved in putting it together. What was amazing about them and others who came into our community was just the determination and the desire to tell the story of what happened there, to ensure it doesn't get forgotten, to make sure that the reality of gun violence in our community and in all communities across this country is told. Because the day of being able to say, you know, that's, you know, that happened there, and then move on is over. The voices coming out of Parkland, the stories coming out of Parkland, the reality that there were kids in that school who had the wherewithal to record what was happening while it was happening, has made this a different conversation forever. And the truth is, because of what happened in Parkland, the gun safety movement is succeeding across this country because of the stories that have been told and continue to be told. The gun safety movement is moving forward in this country, in city after city, state after state. And after November 3rd, we're going to be able to do this in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. You know, you're totally right. This sort of documentary hopefully will get people thinking about that horrible day and but also what has been accomplished, you know, following it from some of the amazing activism that we've seen, you know, from the initial days on until today and continuing. I would say it's been basically 2 years now. I am surprised that in America, which is a country that it ignores most of what's bad that's going on, and the stuff that it acknowledges, it moves on from very quickly. I feel like this is really an event that is still in people's minds. That
it is.
Thanks to people like you, but also the younger activists too. Like you fought to make sure that people can't do what they generally do.
Well, I appreciate that. It's also because gun violence keeps on happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's because 40,000 people a year are dying. And this year, it's going to be even higher than that. It's because we're now seeing the reality that while we're in this pandemic, this administration unleashed a gun surge on America that's having real consequences. Those guns are getting used. And so I can tell you, I'm never going to shut up about this. I'm never going to stop working to ensure we elect the right people because of what happens in this country, what happened to my daughter and 16 others, but 40,000 others, you know, and those aren't all homicide. Over half of those are suicide, but that's gun violence.
Yeah.
And so I think we've shown the country you don't have to sit down quietly and just assume this is okay.
Yeah.
We're going to fix this.
Well, let's talk about one recent effort that you have to that effect of not just sitting down. You have this FTC complaint against Smith & Wesson, you, along with two different gun safety groups. So yeah. What's the goal there?
To hold those manufacturers accountable for the death they bring to our streets. Here's a fact, okay? Those manufacturers use their marketing dollars to sell more and more of those weapons, and they're selling them to kids. Their advertising, their marketing, their promotion is geared at kids. And one of those kids bought one and used it to kill my daughter. Now, in the United States of America, we currently have a law called PLACA, which protects these gun manufacturers from lawsuits, from liability. A guy like me can't go and say, you went ahead and actively sold that gun to this child. What did you do to ensure that child wouldn't use that gun on my daughter? I can't sue them for that because they're protected. Mm-hmm. So I went to the FTC and we filed a complaint. And we're going to hold them accountable. What do I ultimately hope to approve? I want to get those CEOs of those businesses under oath to tell what they were planning, what they thought, why they did it, and why they didn't do anything to protect those that we love from the consequences of their business decisions.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious, you sort of alluded to this, but you know, it's now 95 days until the election. Yep. You know, between now and then, Donald Trump's not going to do anything to rein in gun violence. He's doing everything he can to increase sales, despite the fact that in a, you know, in a previous life, he was against assault rifles in the same way that he used to be pro-choice, and then he reinvented himself to become president. If Donald Trump loses, Biden becomes president, what are your hopes? What are your expectations for what can be accomplished in this area during that time?
Well, first things first. Every one of us in this country, anyone hearing this, needs to do everything in their power, every second of every day, to ensure Joe Biden becomes our next president, to ensure the Senate flips. Because this is not like other elections where it's on the edges, where they're kind of all the same and you have to hold your nose. No, the differences are clear and stark. If Biden becomes our next president, we will be able to do gun safety in the United States of America. We will be able to do things like repeal PLACA, pass background checks, raise the age to 21, things that pass red flag laws, things that will save lives. If Donald Trump is the victor, not only will gun safety not get done, the court will end up being pushed further to the right, and it'll be a non-conversation for generations. I don't mean to be stark. I want people to be so concerned that they are determined to vote, no matter what their circumstances. The only chance Donald Trump has to win right now, because he knows he can't win any other way, is to make you afraid to vote. Don't be afraid. Be afraid of the consequences if you don't vote. Your vote is everything, and you got to get out there and you got to make sure you do it.
Exactly. And for many of you who thankfully live in states that have mail-in voting, make sure that you know, keep apprised of the dates, because sometimes you do have to register early or request it early. So definitely do that. If you're concerned about voting in person, which I totally understand, because the government is doing effectively nothing to make the situation on the ground in terms of public health better by November 3rd than it is today, definitely look into mail-in voting. But Fred, I also wanted to ask you about your upcoming book, Find the Helpers: What 9/11 in Parkland Taught Me About Recovery, Purpose, and Hope. Tell me about the book.
You know, and I appreciate you asking me about this. After my brother died, 4 months before Jamie was killed, I thought I was going through a really brutal time. My brother and I were exceptionally close, and my family had never gone through anything like that before. And then 4 months later, my daughter was killed. And no disrespect to my brother, that was 1,000 times worse. And anyone who has watched me knows I kind of went into this mission to do something about what happened to my family. Much of my mission was driven by a conversation that I had with now Vice President Biden and soon to be President Biden, maybe 10 days after Jamie was killed, where he talked to me about how he got through grief and mission and purpose. And in the months following, as my story started to evolve, I was journaling everything and I was writing things down every day. And I wanted to tell my story, because what really was clear to me is my story wasn't one about grief. It wasn't one about horror. My story was about these amazing people who were a part of my life or became a part of my life, that carried me, that brought me forward, that helped me to take that next step, to be okay. And so I wrote my story because I want people to know, no matter what we go through in life, we can go forward. We can find our path. We can find a path to being okay. And we do it with others. You know, Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, if you're old like me, you grew up watching him. You know,
I did too.
Okay, he's got a famous quote where he talks about his mother saying to him, if ever there are terrible things happening in the world or tragedy, always look to the helpers, the policemen, the firemen, your neighbor. As long as there are helpers, there is hope. My book is one of hope. My book is about my neighbors, my friends, new friends, people in the gun safety movement, Vice President Biden and the story of how we became connected, Speaker Pelosi, and how she helped me in my mission, but how she also helped me the night that I got removed from the State of the Union. You know, so amazing people who have been there to lift me up when I've been feeling weak, and who have strengthened me. And in this time of coronavirus, where we now have 150,000 people who have died, and families who are dealing with the realities that people they love are dying alone and being buried alone. These are tough moments for this country. And I want this country to know we're gonna be okay. Focus on your helpers. Utilize media, you know, the technology to stay connected to people. Use Zoom, you know, or whatever format. Stay connected with the people who love you and the people who you love. We're going to get through this.
The book is Find the Helpers, coming out, I believe, on September 15th, right?
September 15th, available right now on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and the independent bookstore links. So I hope people will take a look at it.
I hope so as well. And also Monday, August 3rd, TYT will be airing Parkland Rising. So everyone definitely, you know, it's not far off. Check that out as well. Fred, as always, we appreciate your time. We know you've got a lot of irons in the fire.
Thank you. And I appreciate you all a whole lot. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.